sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobic, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young, and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends know the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, 2021.
Shut the fuck up.
That's what's up.
Shut up.
Now you know your ass is Willy when they got you in the mag for like half a billy. And your ass ain't Lily White. That means that shit you write must be illy. Either that or your fro is silly. It's both. I think I need to repeat that. Let me try that again. Because it don't sound like it's making sense to this congregation. Here we go. Now, you know your ass is Willy when they got you in the mag for like half a billy. And your ass ain't Lily White. Your ass ain't white. Lily White. That mean that shit you write must be illy. Either that or your flow is silly. It's both. I don't mean to boast, but damn, if I don't brag, them crackers gon' act like I ain't on they ass. The Martha Stewart, that's far from Jewish. Far from a Harvard student, just had the balls to do it. And no, I'm not through with it. Yo, I feel like this deserves a,
bonfire!
I don't think you get it. And followed by a
message.
Okay, one more time. Okay, not the whole thing. I'm just going to say, I don't mean to boast, but damn, if I don't brag, them crackers are going to act like I ain't on their ass. The Martha Stewart, that's far from Jewish. Far from a Harvard student, just had the balls to do it.
Message.
Oh, my God.
Message.
Oh, my God.
Message.
Come on.
Message.
All right, let's start the show. Hey, welcome, bienvenue to another episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, Beat Black, a.k.a. Beat Blizzard, a.k.a. Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com, and a.k.a. Le Grand Papa B. Now, before I continue with today's show, I want to inform you new listeners that this podcast is protected by the red, the black, and the green, and waves a red, black, and a red-blue flag. Rouge et bleu is up in this bitch. I'm representing and holding it down for black folks who grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and Soul in the City on Much Music. This episode is being recorded on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin territory on April 30, 2023, the last day of the month. This episode is also brought to you by the letter F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label as a motherfucking crew, and if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. You know what I just realized? Welcome. Yeah, I already said that, welcome. I just realized, because I think a lot, that how symbolic my intro, how I start these shows and end the show. I start off with this fake rugged exterior and I end with a final thought, which is usually something personal, something, yeah, private, something vulnerable. And, 'cause I was just picturing someone who doesn't know me listening to this, to that intro and going, oh my goodness, oh my God, oh, what the fuck's wrong with this guy? But it is what it is. All right, like always, My shows consist of three parts, three acts, if you will, and I have labeled them as the intro, which is, you know, set the mood and shit. This is where the foreplay. And then we jump after the intro with news and random thoughts. And I end the episode with a nice bouquet, call it final thoughts. So, yeah, so let's get this intro out the way. Usually in the intro, I do shit like think about things that went on this week and dates worth remembering. Happy birthday to Coretta Scott. Coretta Scott, Martin Luther King's wife. And I'm just trying to remember. Yeah, she was born on April 27, 1927. Where? Hagerberger, Alabama. Excuse me. And died on January 30, 2006. Damn. Yeah, man. The wife of Dr. Martin Luther King. You know, I don't know a lot about this woman. But the one time where, how do I say this? I felt like, okay, I need to know more about this person. Was in Ava DuVernay's piece, movie, Selma. And, yeah, I know there's a scene where, okay, Selma, if you don't know, the thing about Selma is they showcase a lot of the contribution made by women during the civil rights movement. That's something that goes ignored. And it's funny how if I only noticed that shit, right? Because there's a scene in Selma where they showed Coretta Scott King, married to Martin Luther King, learning that he was unfaithful. Yeah, he was unfaithful to him. And basically, it's not that she forgave. Okay, I don't know about the forgive. Like, I don't know what was her mindset. But she still, did her part. Continued to do her part in the movement. Whether it's show up. Like, do that politics stuff, right? And I noticed that. I feel like that was intentional to show that scene. Because for me, it was a big deal going, oh my God, she's willing to drop fucking the fact that her husband violated their monogamous agreement for the movement. I remember how that shit got my attention. Like, it was at that moment that I was like, ooh, all right, there are women in this movement, right? Oh, shit, what else do they do? Anyway, not just to say that, hey, congratulations, Coretta Scott, for forgiving your husband for being unfaithful. That's not my point. My point is the stories that never get told. The contributions that are made that are never spoken about. And that's my point when I take the time to remember and wish a happy birthday to Coretta Scott. Ooh, sorry. To Coretta Scott King. She's with the ancestors. All right, another RIP mentioned this week was Harry Belafonte. Born March 1st, 1927, died on April 27, 2023. Was an American singer, actor, activist who popularized calypso music with international audience in 1950. Belafonte was Bajan? Whatever, it doesn't matter. If you listen to this podcast, you pretty much need to know. You probably either know who Harry Belafonte is, or we'll do a Google on his name after the show. Whatever. And last but not least, I'm about to lose my black card on this, is RIP the Jerry Springer. The fact that I end my episode with a final thought is not really me copying Jerry Springer, but he kind of is. But I do remember him ending all his shows with a final thought. And actually never really paying attention to his final thoughts. But that's not the point. I don't know, man. Oh, man. Okay, he died April 27th, 2023 in Chicago. My only point in remembering our Jerry Springer is thank you for the great entertainment on television. I remember watching one of his episodes and hating myself for it. It's like, what the fuck is this trash television? And who knew that trash television would be would be replicated in American Congress? Yeah. All right. What time is it? Okay. No, these intros are short. Oh, yeah. What's her face died? I'm not going to elaborate on there, but the woman who lied on Emmett Till, she finally died. And I think about it, man. How it must be like, not that I care for this particular human being, but I do wonder how it must have been like. Like, unless she's a monster, which I believe she is, but a human being living with that lie. Like, I kind of wonder if she kind of hated living this long. She kind of wished she could have died earlier on. Not to feel sorry for her, but it's more, that was a significant lie that she did, and it led to the death of Emmett Till. She was one of the people who beat up Emmett Till, but, you know, she fucking lied on the poor brother. And this conversation is gonna, what I'm trying to say is one of those complicated conversations. I'm just wondering how awful it must have been like to have, I'm assuming this devil felt guilty for that shit. And I wonder if she kind of wished death visited her even sooner. Like, living this long was like a fucking curse for her. I wonder. I don't know. Whatever. This is just me trying to watch the world through my eyes. But she's dead. That's important. That's what counts. I don't know her name. I forget her name. Caroline something? Whatever. But yeah, that's it. Nothing changes in your life, but, you know, the woman who lied on Emmett Till is dead. That's it. All right, okay. Let's jump to news and random thoughts, and they go from there. All right? Oh, right. Before I do that, I need to play this. Yeah. All right. First things first. Yo, I was actually in a good mood before recording, and then I made the mistake of scrolling through Twitter, which I'm convinced, it's doing exactly what Elon wants it to do and make motherfuckers miserable, if you're not already. But I'm starting to think that I have two Twitter accounts. One is for is B Blizzak, and the other one is Shut Up Podcast. And my B Blizzak one has a lot of people I know directly or in this country. Anyways, there's one particular person on my timeline who, God bless her, journalism and shit like that, but sometimes her content, and I don't know if it's intentional, but sometimes her content just depresses the fuck out of me. Anyways, it was just, it was a recording of, at first it was, okay, I gotta say, why do you follow her then? Yeah, because at first it was like, hey, Al, thank you for attending events that, so I don't have to attend them. but it's just, you know, it's, okay, hold on, if I'm, something's wrong with my headphones. Yo, B-Black needs new equipment, folks. Hold on a second. I thought the battery might be dead, but something's up with this. How come I don't hear you too well in my, fuck, it's that time of the year, folks. I don't hear you too well in my, that's not better, in my headphones. God damn it. All right, okay, doesn't matter. We'll make do with what we have. Laura will, oh yeah, holy shit. Yeah, okay, my only point with this is that, yeah, if I had a competition between my B Blizzak account and my Shut Up Podcast account, which one on my timeline is more depressing? Oh, right, I was in the middle of explaining how, I guess there was a protest in Toronto, one of those, the usual drag queens at the library reading to some kids, and the counter-protesters, fucking asshole. Yeah, the counter-protesters were backed by the white supremacy folks, but that's not the part that bothers me. The part that bothers me is seeing the counter-protesting yelling at the protesters, the folks who are there to defend the storytelling, And most of them are just like kind, just like polite, or at the very least civil speaking. And there's this one video of this dude yelling at her, and mask keeps coming off, and it just, oh fuck, it kind of wish you were there to, like, you know what, officer, I'm gonna go to jail tonight, fuck it, all right, I'm just gonna put just one good punch to this guy, and y'all could take me, you could take us both away. I know, it was just I just, that video just made me feel like a child and looking at the world and thinking how life is unfair. This world is so unfair. Like, mean people suck. I hate bullies, man. I fucking hate bullies. And that video was just reminded me of the bullies in the world who get to live out their lives and make other people miserable. With that said, because I'm trying to focus on the goodness in life, the good things in life. Last night, part of why I was in a good mood is because yesterday I remember I made myself an omelet. And that's it. The simple things in life. You got to journal this shit, right? Just the simple shit, or else life will depress you. So I made myself a motherfucking omelet. And the beauty in it is how I was thinking about making an omelet. I know this sounds silly. This is some corny shit I'm about to tell you. But I remember thinking about this, making the fucking omelet, buying the ingredients, and I made it, and it actually tasted good. I'm like, damn. Oh, my God. There was a time where I hated my own cooking. I mean, I kind of still do, but the one thing I do that I'm proud of, that I do better than the restaurants, I feel personally, not for a guest. I mean, I cook for myself. I don't cook for other people. But when it comes to my own breakfast, yeah, I knocked that shit out the park. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, made an omelet, tasted good, and I felt the need to journal this shit. What else? I finished season one of This Is Us. Oh, right. Sorry, I'm laughing. Now I remember why I was on Twitter. Oh, this shit is funny. Okay, hold on a second. Now I remember. Okay, let me bring you in on this joke. Now I remember why I was on Twitter before this episode. I had no intention of talking about my account on Twitter. The only reason I was on Twitter is because, in relation to finishing This Is Us, I wrote a tweet about it, and I wanted to share that tweet with the rest of you. But you know what happened? I ended up, in the process of finding that tweet, I got distracted by the shit on the For You page of my timeline, which just distracted me. And I completely forgot to find the quote, and I'm going to do that right now. Okay, hold on a second. Nope, focus, because I have listeners here, I'm going to stay focused. Okay, which account is this? Whoops, no. Go to your Shut Up Podcast account, okay? Just bear with me, gang, because I'm a goddamn professional. Okay. The white man's got a God complex. Okay, there we go. All right, so the tweet goes, I didn't know I was the sentimental, heart-feely type until I started watching This Is Us. That's bullshit. That's a lie. I've always known that I was the sentimental, touchy type. It's just this show is the one show where I'm watching it while accepting the fact that I'm sentimental and my point is I enjoyed the show. I enjoyed the show, especially how it's a mental exercise. It's a journey for me too, because, yo, this motherfucking thing is a tearjerker, man. They'll go after your, like, it goes after your, the feely, like, if you're the touchy-feely type, that motherfucking show will pluck at your heartstring. And, yeah, there will be moments where you'll be like, oh, fucking onions, man, these goddamn onions in my eyes. And, yeah, you'll be fighting tears, man. Season one. Anyway, all this to say, it was a dope show. Shout out to the homies in my life who recommended me watching this show. Even though I'm mad at them for plugging this show. Okay, I'm only mad at them every time this show plucks at the heartstring. Is that the expression, heartstrings? Like, makes me feel shit. Because then it reminds me I'm a human. It reminds me that I am not the alpha male that I thought that I was. That I got feelings and shit. Sorry, if you knew me, you'd laugh at the idea of me associating myself with as the alpha male type. But here, it doesn't matter. All right, okay. All right, let's get a little silly here. Church ratchetness. I finally got some church ratchetness. Is a little mini segment that I have on my show. Church ratchetness is just me as an ex-Christian, ex-preacher's kid. Well, I'm still a preacher's kid, but ex-Christian preacher's kid who used this segment to talk shit about the church. Now, if you are a listener, a subscriber, part of the Black Guy Who Tips community, you're probably telling yourself, what? This nigga is stealing from the Black Guy Who Tips, because Black Guy Who Tips has a segment called Sword Ratchetness. Now, I want to be clear. Ain't no stealing involved going on. I want y'all to know that they're McDonald's. The Black Guy Who Tip is McDonald's, and I'm McDowell's. That's all I'm saying. I ain't stealing shit from them. They're talking about sword ratchetness. I'm talking about church ratchetness. And it's just my way to vent about the church. And in this particular case, this is one of this clip I like because other Christians hate it. It's a sermon that I kind of wish I was there to hear myself. But the homie's getting creative, man. I think a lot of these churches are just trying to create content that's going to go viral. I don't know, whatever. But mission accomplished, because I'm sharing it with you all. And here it goes. I'm taking y'all to church with this sermon. Hold on.
From heaven. And it was bread to them. We don't make it rain on booty cheeks.
Nope.
We don't make it rain on strippers. We only reverence one stripper. And that's the one that took off glory.
Took off glory.
To put on humanity. And then get butt naked on a cross.
Butt naked.
To die for both you and me. The only stripper I'm in love with is Jesus. And he's the one that puts that bread in my pocket. That bread in my pocket. From heaven.
Bread in my pocket. That bread in my pocket.
Message.
Bread in my pocket.
Message.
Bread in my
message.
Pocket. Oh my God. I like who the person I took this quote from, this tweet from, is like, this is 3 dots, disgusting. And I guess he's a churchgoer. Seriously, man. Honestly, I would have ignored that clip. I would have ignored that clip. But seeing, she's a theologian. Oh my God. Doesn't matter. Crazy. I don't trust it. Oh, red lip theology. No wonder. That's interesting. But look, man, seriously, I love the clip, man. It reminds me of all the times I tried to get creative with the gospel. And it only pissed off other Christians. Anyway, yeah, man. Yeah, in the church of white Jesus, ain't no creativity allowed. And don't be comparing Jesus to a stripper. I feel like there should be band to make her dance. Whatever. I can't. Whatever. That shit was funny. Yo, there's a lot of time. There's a lot of bullshit like this on my timeline. And sometimes it's good and sometimes it pisses me off. Whatever. It just is what it is. All right. Next item. So I read this opinion piece. And I forgot to. I do that a lot. I forgot to link it. Hold on, let me fix it. I read this opinion piece titled Monique's Latest Netflix Special Proves Black Gen X Comedy Is Dead. And the author's name is Lawrence Ross. And I first thought was, okay, first let me find the article. It's, HuffPost. Yes. Now, I guess that's what an opinion piece is, someone else's opinion. And there's been opinion pieces that just pissed me off, that made me like hate the author, made me want to say, what the fuck you know about comedy and shit like that. But in this particular case, I'm not mad at the homie. I love that homie expressed a truth that I'm kind of hoping will make some of these comics respond with anger. And just to be like, oh, what's wrong? Your feelings are hurt? Because homie said some truth that will hurt some feelings. And okay, and notice I use the word truth. It's because he's right. There's a level of a lot of these Gen X. Okay, I want to be clear. A lot of these comedians are heroes of mine. Or I grew up being heroes. I've been grateful for their content. I'm talking about Chris Rock, the Dave Chappelle, Monique, all that he listed. All of them are heroes. I do not take away their contributions to the art form. But it's true. I've noticed it. And the person who made me see this very clearly is Bill Maher. Okay, now he's not a black comedian, but I've been thinking about the Bill Maher's, these old fucking comedians bitching about how PC culture is ruining comedy. And like these guys can't let go of the good old days of comedy. And actually, you know what? I'm going to play the clip that helped me understand the point Lawrence Ross is making. And this is a conversation Bill Maher is having with Bill Burr, comedian Bill Burr. All right? Comedian Bill Burr is actually, Bill Maher and Bill Burr are two comedians who I enjoyed in the past. Bill Maher, now, not so much. Bill Burr is, I feel, gets it. Like, hey, look, not everyone's going to like me. Like, I think he's more accepting of, you know, I'll tell you what, I'll just play the clip. Here we go. Here we go. Sorry.
And you know, I've always enjoyed you. I think you're a great comic. But I thought tonight maybe we would, like, sort of share a cry together because I think we have something in common, which is that we think political correctness may be ruining comedy, or at least threatening it. Mm. Because I know you've had your problems with that. And you did a routine recently about how women like it rough. And then, of course, the internet police got all over you.
Well, I got to be honest with you. I didn't notice if that happened. Because I don't pay attention to it. I don't read comments.
Happened. Yeah, they hated you.
Yeah, but who did?
The haters.
This is my thing. Who? Like the 20 haters. People? Like 20 people with a hashtag can get right. Like a news story going now. And I just don't think there's no problem. Like the amount of times somebody tells a joke and they'll say that there's a controversy at a comedy club. That's funny is they'll show the clip on the news and like you hear the crowd laughing. So the comic is basically guilty of telling a joke that worked.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then if you put it on the news, yeah, it's going to be a completely different context. But, I mean, I don't go on stage and worry about what people are thinking. Right. It's a really weird time where people are just bringing this up all the time, like this is a major problem. I'm not experiencing it. I think it's like a half a dozen stories. And like usual, they're trying to act like, you know, the sky is falling. It isn't. It's a right. fun time. Come out to a comedy club. You know, you'll have a good time. It's all jokes.
Right on. And to undergo that, I mean, Chris Rock says he won't play colleges anymore because they're too politically correct.
You just ignore them. It's like 3 days. They flip out for 3 days. They try to bully you into an apology.
Well, you can't ignore them when they're right in the audience and you're playing to them.
You tell them to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, believe me.
It's a comedy
you know what?
Show. That's all you do. Yeah. It's like...
Sweetheart, I do it here every week.
It's
you don't have to tell me.
Manufactured strategic outrage.
Right. Then forget it. Let's not have a good cry together. But as long
as
we're,
what you wanted
as long
out
as
of
we're, as long as we're on the subject, I'm
I kind of no. I really love this moment between Bill Burr and Bill Maher because Bill Burr. I guess Bill Burr wasn't trying to disrespect. Like he understood where he was coming from, but he was also proposing his solution. It's like, and he's making a point. Look. I hate Bill Maher right now, right? This is the difference between these two. Why Bill Burr has made some jokes that I didn't like, right? He's like the a few jokes, but him making that statement is, yo, love me or him permitting people to not like him is powerful. Is all I needed to hear. It's Thank you. As opposed to this bitch-ass Bill Maher who's complaining about YouTube people don't like my fucking comedy. How do you think I feel? Bro, I don't even have a fraction of your fucking success. You'll see me bitching. Well, I am bitching. But I mean, you know, I mean, it's like Bill Maher is like pure the epitome of white folks. It's like people are supposed to fucking love me. Fuck you, man. No. Because Bill Maher's going down this rabbit hole of, yo, white people unite, saying a whole bunch of stupid shit that woke culture this. Women should stop complaining because it's even worse in Muslim countries. Black people you dropping the N-word because I'm an entitled white folks. Oh, man, okay, the emotions are coming up. I really hate Bill Maher to the point that I wish I never knew him. What's fucked up is I have a book by him. I never read it. On my shelf, sitting on my shelf. It's just someone who knows me gave it to me as a gift. And figured that there's something in that book that I would have appreciated. But, you know what? Okay, I can't deny the fact that I used to be a fan of the dude. But now he's just gone. He's like Trump. He's just gone down an alley that I just can't fuck with. But that's not the point that I'm trying to make. Going back to the initial op-ed. After hearing that Bill Maher piece, I'm not sure what I heard first, whether I read that opinion piece first or heard Bill Maher, but it made me realize that the Bill Maher's, the old-ass comedians like him, what they're bitching about is the fact that it's not that comedy's dying. It's the people who find you funny, they're dying. Like, a new era of comedy is coming. And going is a part. This is why I still miss or really enjoyed the Bodega Boys. Their level of comedy, because I noticed how they would use problematic shit and make it into the joke, but not in a way that dismisses people, not in a dismissive way, but in a way that's Basically, they would make a shout out to the comedians who understand that it's not about just making your own self laugh. It's not about making people laugh for your own fucking ego. It's to make everyone fucking laugh. You know, there was a time where, and actually it still exists, where white people were like the norm and they could get away with making racist, sexist, transphobic, homophobic jokes. And the rest of us had to, hey, the kings laugh, so we got to laugh too. Now, we're in a world where we can say, hey, you say the N-word one more time and I'm going to strangle you to death. Or, that shit wasn't funny. That joke you just made using the N-word wasn't funny. That joke you made was transphobic. It's pointing that shit out. You're supposed to, as a comedian, come back and remix it. Not bitch and moan like Bill Maher's doing. I have no respect for that dude. Not at all. And last point, because I know I'm going over, is, last point is, I'm just saying, is it reminded, that moment hearing Bill Maher bitch about comedy reminded me of my days in comedy and hearing comedians bitch about the fucking audience. It's like they forgot who they're serving. You know, the audience ain't there for your convenience. You're there for their fucking... I used to hate hearing comedians bitch about, oh, fuck, you can't say shit anymore. Like, they're acting like the stage is a tool for your fucking ego. Nah, man, you're... I'm sorry. I just got back, and I would just... maybe that's why. No, I'm not... Sorry, this is a different conversation on why I stopped doing comedy, but that didn't help. Let's just say it didn't help. Now, speaking of comedians who know the who know how to read a room, I'm going to play one by, and comedian's name is Opie Olabaju. Well, okay, when I can't pronounce word in English, I pronounce it in French because it's easier to go syllable by syllable. And I guess his nickname is Opie. His first name's Opie, but Opie Jokey. And here's a joke about him trying to be a street dude. I love the joke mainly because, homie, fuck, you're just talking about my own life. Here we go.
I tried to be a street dude. I know that's hard to imagine because I look like I make those lo-fi hip-hop beats to study to, but I did, man. I tried real hard to be a street dude until one time I went to this party in Baltimore and they straightened me the fuck out. I went to this party, this huge fight broke out, and I did all the street dude moves, you know. I beat my chest, called the dude in front of me a bitch. Uh-huh. Before I could throw one punch, this girl got in between it. She said, mm-mm, you can't fight him. And I was like, why can't I fight him? And she said, cuz it's real nigga shit, and you ain't a real nigga. Yeah, and then I started to cry. Dog, with tears coming down my eyes, I was like, boy, I am a real nigga. And all the real niggas came up to me and was like, hey, you should go home. Go home and do some nerdy nigga shit. Like, I don't know, practice your xylophone or like read poetry to your hamster. And I walked, it's actually the Glockenspiel. I'm second chair percussion. He's like, yeah, go do that.
That joke reminded me of this one time I was in a club. This is my real nigga story. Is long story short, I'm thinking of all these women in the club that I went after, and them reject them telling me no was really saying, bro, you can't handle this pussy. This is real nigga pussy, and I don't mean this as a as dismissing my masculinity or whatnot, but it's more like, bro, I'm used to men who have emotional issues, who've been like, fuck, the men who like in and out of jail have. It was their way of saying, stay in your lane, homeboy. This pussy is meant to tame the beast. And nothing about you says beast. You look like you have a happy life, grew up with two parents. Yeah, a woman like me will just ruin your life. I'm doing you a favor by telling you no. Anyway, yeah, man. I just, shout out to all us brothers who had to learn the hard way that they ain't the real, quote unquote, real niggas. All right. Okay. What else do I got in there? Oh, shit. Not bad, man. I'm doing well on my timeline. Okay. So, oh, no. Okay. Two more things to go. One more is, this is a more serious topic. Actually, the last two are a bit more serious, but this one is more serious than the other one. And it's a, something someone said about forcing women into slavery. So, I'm pro-choice. Pro-choice. Not because I'm trying to gain points. Not because it's the hip thing to say, but the idea, if I was a woman, I would, I could see myself being the kind of woman who, like, has final say on her fucking body. You know what I mean? I'm just, anyways. So, I'm going to play this clip. It's a reminder about the evilness of forcing women to give birth. Was it the last episode? Where I talked about how, yeah, man, let these women choose, man, or else you end up in situations where babies end up in garbage dumps. But my point is, I'm playing this clip to remind you of the evil of forcing women to give birth. Give birth or forcing a woman's hand when it comes to unwanted pregnancy. Here we go.
We cannot forget that forced pregnancy was also a feature of American slavery. And we must remember that the effort to ratify the 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery and involuntary servitude, specifically related to the forced pregnancies that were placed upon Black women and girls that they had to endure. These forced pregnancies were so normalized that advertisements in the 1700s and the 1800s tell us quite clearly what it was that they endured. These kinds of advertisements were what senators read as they drank their morning coffee and orange juice. So deeply troubling that baked into the story of American slavery and abolition is the story of sexual terrorism inflicted on Black girls and women, so troublingly normalized that the descriptors breeding wench and mulatto child simultaneously read as mundane daily affairs and horrors.
Would you vote yes or would you vote no?
Senator Kennedy, I refuse to be shackled by your question. Let me clarify what the 14th Amendment says in the first sentence, that citizens of this United States are individuals that are born. That is what our Constitution says.
But do you support our Constitution?
Two words that you will not find in the Dobbs decision, black woman or black women together, you will not find five paragraphs that speak to the forced and voluntary nature of reproduction of black women during slavery, being forced into pregnancies. You will not read anything about black maternal mortality in the Dobbs decision. Abortion had not been criminalized in the United States. The Pilgrims had performed abortion. So had indigenous people. When abortion becomes criminalized in this country, it was leading to and around the time of the Civil War. And we see some of the same rhetoric today used then, the concern about the browning of the United States. And that was the impetus for early abortion laws during the time of the Civil War. And we see the same kind of rhetoric today.
All right. This is a law professor. You were just listening to the words of a law professor. Her name is Michelle Goodwin. And it still reminded me of the evils of forcing first birth. These people tell you that they're pro-life? Nah, pro-life is forced birth. Because if you were pro-life, you would do shit like give a fuck about. It'd be different if these so-called pro-life types, these forced birth types, were like, oh, and pro-care. Give a fuck about these kids. Give a fuck about these babies once they're born. That's it. I don't want to have to play that clip because it moved me. Last but not least, I'm going to play a clip on Giannis. Okay, I should look up his last name. Giannis. He's a basketball player. Like Biggie would say, he's one of these. He's one of them 6'5 niggas. And his views on failure that I found powerful. Hold on a second. Let's see if I can find the clip. Views on failure. Here we go. So an interviewer, I guess he lost a playoff game. As you can tell, I don't watch basketball, but I like hearing these kind of stories. And interviewer asked him, do you consider your loss a failure? And here we go.
I just asked Bud the exact same question, but I'm curious for you. Do you view this season as a failure?
Oh, my God. Okay, because I'm not that up. You asked me the same question last year, Eric. Okay, do you get the promotion every year on your job? No, right? So every year you work is a failure. Yes or no? No. Every year you work towards something, towards a goal, right? Which is to get a promotion, to be able to take care of your family, to be able, I don't know, provide a house for them or take care of your parents. You work towards a goal. It's not a failure. It's steps to success. You know, and if you've never, I don't want to make it personal. So, there's always steps to it. You know, Michael Jordan played 15 years, won 6 championship. The other 9 years was a failure. That's what you're telling me. No, I'm asking you a question. Yes or no? Okay, exactly. So why are you asking me that question? It's a wrong question. There's no failure in sports. You know, there's good days, bad days. Some days you are able to be successful. Some days you're not. Some days it's your turn. Some days it's not your turn. And that's what sport's about. You don't always win. Some other people's going to win. And this year, somebody else is going to win. Simple as that. We're going to come back next year, try to be better, try to build good habits, try to play better, not have a 10-day stretch with playing bad basketball. You know, and hopefully we can win a championship. So 50 years from 1971 to 2021 that we didn't win a championship, it was 50 years of failures? No, it was not. It was steps to it, you know, and we were able to win one. Hopefully we can win another one.
Message!
You know, I didn't want to make it personal because you asked me the same question last year, and last year I was in the right mind space to answer the question back, but I remember it.
Where's this brother from? Hold on, Giannis. Hold on a second.
People are talking about the fire.
Sorry, fuck. Where's this brother from? Okay, first I thought he was from the Dominican Republic, but I think he's from the continent. I think he's from the motherland. All right, okay. That's okay. Let me just get to the point. Is I grew up. No, let me just get to the point. What I was thinking about when he was speaking is the point he's making. Excuse me. You're gonna have, this is one of those, you're gonna have to decide life for your own self. And I am a student of Giannis' school. What I was thinking about is how he made sense of the saying that success is not a destination. It's a journey. It's a fucking journey. So there's going to be ups and downs before. Like, to nothing succeeds like success. The perfect example I could use is, while I was doing comedy, I realized what separates the comedian from the funny person. The comedian is the one who can bomb and still come back the next day. That's the only thing that separates. Like, a lot of people are funny and they show up to comedy clubs heckling the comic because they think they can be funnier than the person on stage. But the truth is, what separates the comedian from the funny person is how comedians can accept bombing. I remember the first time I bombed as a comedian. And it hit me hard because it was in front of a bunch of black folks, and I was convinced this new joke I was about to try was gonna work, and broke my fucking, I felt shame like I could not explain. It's like to me, it was the equivalent of those poor saps who ask their girlfriend if they wanted to marry him in public and the girl turns them down and these suckers are on their knees with holding the ring, trying to wonder what the fuck, where did I go wrong? My point is, I remember bombing and I felt like shit. And the comedian who was like hosting it, he wasn't like, oh, it's going to be all right. Nah, he just fucking weighed in on it. Used my failure to, would you use my failure to be part of the joke, whatever, right? But that's not the point. So I get off stage, and I felt like a failure. I felt so bad. And what got me is, when I got back to the stage, is all the comics. Okay, it was a bunch of white comics. That's this is my point is, by pointing out that they were white, is that there was like a, come on, fraternité. Like a brotherhood, like a family. Basically, one comic was pretty much like, it's like I was waiting for them to be like, oh, you idiot, you sucker, you know, to respond to my failure like everyone else has. Like, like you're a fucking idiot. You failed, you beat on me for it. Nah, all of them acted like, one of them acted like, dust up, like it's second nature. He just like, it happens. Shit happens. Sometimes you have good sets. Sometimes you have bad sets. Another comedian was like, he must have sensed that I was hurt down and out. And he gave me some friendly advice. He said, yeah, man, that joke, you kind of went over people's head and blah, blah. Basically, he gave me some pointers that I'm like, okay, oh, yeah, you're right. Like, help me understand the science of it. But the amazing part about, that moment is how I realized that, nah, man, it's part of the gig. Once you decide to be a comedian, to do comedy, the unwritten contract is you accept the good times and the bad times. Sometimes you just bomb after bomb. Like, apparently Chappelle told the story about how, or Chappelle's and Chris Rock, one of them, how they used to suck at the beginning, but then they got better. I've seen that. I've seen comics go on stage, and I'm like, why the fuck are you doing comedy? And then weeks later, they're fucking bringing the house down. Like, that's the game. It's for the first time in my life I understood what it means that success, nothing succeeds like success. Man, I don't have the words to explain it. It's like, it's amazing how I didn't understand it and now understand it. So what homie was just explaining is like, look, man, sure, you can diss us. You can look at this shit as failing. But that's not how I look at it. This was a lesson learned for me. This is part of the game. It's like, some people win, some people... listening to homie talk reminded me of how I had all the worst coaches in my life. And not just coaches. I'm talking about these assholes. The Gordon Grekos. The basically... third place is for losers. Second place is for losers. Like, people who people who believe they were being motivating by insulting you, by saying, yeah, fuck it, only winners in this camp. Like, maybe that works for you. Maybe that shit motivates you, like being reminded of failure, of dissing you and insulting you. Maybe that works for you, but that shit is not how you nourish me into winning. Because I'm listening to homie talk, and I'm thinking about the two camps, the two school of thoughts. You got the assholes on one side saying, man, that's some loser talk. Only winners only win. You know, all that shit. I will not lose. Like, those guys. I can't fuck with that mindset. I'm the person that, for me, in order for me to win, I need to understand that winning is not it's not a final destination. It's a fucking journey. And that journey means that there's days you're going to win. And there's days you're not going to win. And on those days where you don't win, you learn from that shit. It's just sheer feedback. Like, an example is I used to program. Well, I still call myself a program, but I used to program, right? And I remember what separated me from in school when we were writing program is when my code didn't work. I didn't allow it to piss me off. A lot of people, you know, your code, you're writing a program and it's supposed to print up hello world. And instead, it's giving you a syntax error or, you know, like go back to Africa. I don't know, whatever. It's not giving you the results you wanted. And, you know, most program would give the middle finger to the screen. Like, I've done that too. I'm not above that. But I learned that, nah, that's not how I'm going to fix this. That's not how I win. The way I win is understand what it's doing. Like, that failure is feedback. Now, look, I want to be clear. I am not a motivational speaker. I am not a rapper. I am not a motivational speaker. I'm just a guy who knows what it's like to lose. And is just trying something different. Trying to look at the world different. I'm not the guy you want to come to tell you some inspirational word. If you're inspired by what I just said, good for you. But I'm just saying I get it now. I understand what they mean. It took this perspective from Giannis, plus combined with a few life experience, to understand what people mean when they say success is not a destination, it's a fucking journey. Beautiful. So yeah, that's amazing, man. I mean, man, so not bad. I didn't think I had anything to talk about on this podcast, and here we are now, 51 minutes in, and I still haven't gotten to final thoughts. But that said, this concludes the segment on news and random thoughts, and let's get into final thoughts and get the fuck out of here. So here we go. Woo! You know what? I think I need a new board. Yes, I do. I need a new board. I don't know if you can hear me tapping my board, but the levels do not feel accurate. But here we are, man. I just hope that it's loud enough for you to hear what you need to hear. All right, final thoughts. Let's start with, before I go into what's up with the title and intro verse of today's episode, I'm going to play this clip that speaks to me. Whether it's this clip by Logan Cohen? Anyways, whatever. Here we go.
Traumatized children often dream of someone coming and rescuing them. We never imagined it would in fact be ourselves as adults.
I'm going to play this again.
Traumatized children often dream of someone coming and rescuing them. We never imagined it would in fact be ourselves as adults.
You know what's funny? Despite being in therapy, despite resonating to that message, I still don't see myself as a traumatized child. Even though I did grow up as a sensitive child and I it was a big handle will care sign on me, but to my parents, to my family, they just had a cookie cutter approach to raising a child, right? And that cookie cutter approach didn't work well on me. And as a result, That's the part that made me a traumatized child, I guess. Not traumatized like rape survivor traumatized. I'm talking about, I mean, it's hard to admit. It's hard to say that. It's hard to put out. It's like, yeah, all those, okay, first of all, I was going to all those people who say, yeah, I was beaten as a child and I turned out all right. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. I'm saying, look, I'm saying our parents didn't know better. A lot of what they know about parenting came from slavery. If you're a black parent, if you're from a black parent, right? And parents didn't know better. And a lot of the tools they saw, they were taught as parenting tools. Some of them were detrimental. All this to say, despite the fact that I know all this shit, I still can't get myself to see myself as a traumatized child, even though the evidence are all in front of me. Like I said, okay. So let's just get to the message of what he was saying of, on the last episode I did talk about, sometimes I say shit and don't realize that there's a concept for the idea that I'm trying to express. But I did admit that I've gone my entire life, still 48, believing that someone is going, someone's going to come rescue me. Someone's going to be like John. Someone's going to show up in my life like Morpheus did. And I bet there's a lot of people like that, you know, that like they're Morpheus. If it's not Morpheus, then it's going to be that my one and only. I'm going to meet a woman who's going to, her love is going to change my life. And now I went from a zero to a hero. You know what I mean? If it wasn't for that good pussy that she put down on me, I became a greater person than I am today. I'm shocked to hear this. I'm shocked to realize that that mindset is a product of being traumatized. And here's the thing. This is not the first time I've heard this shit before. Anyways, on the last episode, I think I talked about how, I gotta be that person for myself. I had that realization for my own self. And just powerful, man. It was just powerful. With that said, which finally brings me to what's up with the title and an introverse, right? Intro. Sorry, I don't mean to put you on standby. What's that word? Suspense, excuse me. Okay, I forget there's an audience in front of me. I am correcting my notes as I'm speaking to you. All right, what's up with today's title? Okay, so shout out to all you Jay-Z fans because you'd recognize the verse that I recited today is comes from his track, What More Can I Say? And the point of the track is just him. Exactly. I'll just read the annotation from genius.com. It goes, in the street single of the Black Album, Jay contemplates the retirement he had promised himself after the album's release. He also uses this song to boast through many of the boasts are true about why he should be considered the greatest. Amazing. The beat samples MFSB's 1973 song Something for Nothing, which was previously sampled on Keep Your Hands High. Oh, interesting. By Tracy Lee and Biggie. That's not the point. Okay, yeah. All right, look, bottom line is, when I started out as a hip-hop fan and Jay-Z came out, I was not really a fan of that guy. And it turns out it's because the frequency to processes, to understand his lyrics, I just didn't have that. It wasn't my default setting. I had to use a different part of my mind to finally understand Jay-Z's lyrics and appreciate them. But I remember when I finally, or one of the many times, I found myself going, okay, hold on a second. I need to pay attention to what this rapper's saying. Is I remember hearing that verse, that verse where he says, far from Jewish, the Martha Stewart that's far from Jewish, far from a Harvard student, just had the balls to do it. Basically, him saying, yo, I'm not a smart guy. I just got a lot of balls. And that's a powerful line for me because it reminds me, it's kind of like realizing that it's not just about being intelligent. Sometimes it's about having imagination. Sometimes it's not just about having imagination. Sometimes you just need to fucking do it. Again, not a motivational speaker. I am not the person you want to come to get some motivational advice. Because if you look at my own fucking life, you'll be like, hey, man, you're contradicting yourself. I'm just understanding shit that I take that I used to take for granted. And part of this came, if I referenced the last episode, but realized that some of you probably just know me. Like, this is the only episode you'll know me from. But still, I mentioned it that in the past, in the last episode, I talked about how my therapist gave me a challenge and I haven't, and it's scaring the shit out of me. It just gave me a challenge and just scaring the shit out of me. And I've been trying to rationalize my way into, basically, it's pretty much, she's saying, jump in the pool. That's really what she, it's just, it's the same challenge as, you know, when you're in the pool and it looks fun. Everyone else seems to be having fun. And you're asking stupid questions like, is the water cold? Is it hot? How's the water? Shit like that. When the truth is, you'll figure it the fuck out if you just jumped in the fucking pool. A coward dies a thousand deaths. A soldier dies but one. Yes, I'm over-rationalizing this shit. I'm doing the math. I got Pythagoras theories. I'm crunching numbers. To do what she's asking me to do, and I'm realizing, B, you're full of you're bullshitting. Just jump in the goddamn pool, man. You're better off. Wow, I just realized this was the title of one of my episodes. But you're better off dying once than dying a thousand times, than dying a thousand deaths. Wow. Look, this week might be very different. Wednesday episode might be very different. I'll probably explain what's that shit that's been holding me back. But it's not just that. There's something going on at work where there's a situation going on at work and I've been holding back. It's not that serious, though. It's not like before, right? But it's just a little situation going on at work. Basically, someone's getting picked on, and it's fucking bothering me. And I've been asked by a whole bunch of people, nah, stay out of it. That's their fight. And it's been driving me nuts. But there's a situation where speaking up, I might speak up, and shit might get me in trouble. But it is what it is. That'll be the result. But yeah, but like Jay-Z said, the balls to do it. You know, not bad. Okay. I'm going to make one final point is, when I think about the verse, far from a Harvard student, just had the balls to do it. I'm thinking of the first word that comes to mind is risk. And I think about how I've grown up to look at risk as a bad thing. There's no such thing as a good risk. There's some people who can equate risk with opportunity. Not me, man. For me is, look, was this shit risky? Did you do it? Did you fail? Well, good. That's what you deserve. Spat. I grew up in a family that was very conservative. That didn't believe in taking risk. Religion played a big part. Throw in the whole Jesus shit. Jesus don't want you taking risk. Sometimes I think the version of Christianity, of the gospel I grew up with, was the same one that was used on slaves to prevent them from running away. It's like, yeah, man, nah. Fuck that. Don't stay on this plantation. Well, being it's Haiti, stay on this cane plantation, sugar cane plantation, and don't go out because God will be mad at you. I think I was taught that version of the gospel. Not take some risk, not the fly away And like, I knew that the version of the gospel I was taught was bullshit. The first time I heard that Mark Twain quote that says, 20 years from now, you're more likely to regret the things you didn't do over the things you did do. I grew up believing the opposite. Like, that was part of the Christianity, part of the religion was, you're going to regret the things. Like, don't do things that might get you in trouble. Think before acting. Pensez avant d'agir. Like, risk was a bad thing. I like, gambling? No, can't talk about gambling. Like, nah. When I think of the word risk, I still, someone said, I remember the line, it goes, sometimes it's better to ask for permission than, sometimes it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. Nah, for me, the notion I grew up with is, there's no such thing as asking for permission. Don't ever ask for forgiveness. Avoid being in situations where you'll be asking for permission, asking for forgiveness. Don't take risks. Take no risk. Risk is a bad thing. People who take risks go to hell. People who take risks are unfaithful. People who take risks are steal from kids, have gambling addictions, have AIDS, are not happy, or get themselves in trouble. Risk equals trouble. Which is why you would imagine that now today, reflecting on the idea of the balls to do it, is some revolutionary thinking. Risk equals losing. That's how it feels like. That's why I've always been risk adverse. Because the concept of risk is, and it's not just the risk that's the part. Oh, wow. Okay. 360 degrees here. What time is it? Okay. I'm going to wrap this up. Okay. I'm thinking out loud, right? It's not just the risk part that bothers me. It's also the idea of the only thing on the other end of risk is regret. The only thing on the other end is loss, failure. Like, keep your cards to your chest. Stay out of people's way. Don't take any risk. Shut the fuck up. Be quiet. Be seen but not heard. Heard but not seen. Like, that's the world I grew up in. And I'm not blaming my parents. I'm saying this is how I process this world for it to make sense. And living in a world where you don't take any chances, avoid risk. Fuck risk management. These nuts. Yeah, manage that shit to zero. Just don't do it. That's how life made sense to me. And I'm thinking about, because I know there's people who were like, grew up on the complete opposites. Risk taker. It's like, fuck that. If I'm not feeling that adrenaline rush, then what the fuck am I living for? I'm not dissing being growing up conservative, but I'm just saying that's all I know. That's all I know. And the concept of a world of risk. I don't know. It's my new challenge, accepting risk as part of not failing. I guess. I don't know. More, I don't know. I guess. I feel like Roy Wood Jr. at the, White House correspondent. And he makes a joke about the problem. And then when he gets to, when he gets to the part of his joke where it sounds like he's going to say some call to action, he goes, I forget what the joke was, but he goes, how do you solve this problem? He goes, I don't fucking know. That's what you people are responsible. That's what you people are supposed to figure out. I'm just a comedian. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm talking about how, I don't know how you go from believing that risk is a bad thing to accepting it for what it's worth. That's it. I'm going to stop here before I say more shit and just repeat going in circles on this topic. But just say that. It was a powerful verse. That's one of the many lines that made me say, God damn, this Jay-Z guy. What's that line? under understand the intelligence that Jay-Z has. I'm not, you know, forgive me, Tupac. I know you said fuck Jay-Z, but he's got some points. He's got some point, man. He's got some point. Yeah. Yeah, if you don't know that, not just a Tupac stan, I'm a Tupac disciple. Anyways, yeah. With that said, this concludes today's episode of Shut Up Podcast. Yo, I'm actually feeling better, especially considering that I had one of those. A lot of my episodes I start with, I don't think I have anything to say. Then I'm like Nas on New York State of Mind. Yeah, only Nas fans who will understand that joke. But with that said, this concludes today's episode. Thank you for listening. Seriously, man. Holler at me if you want to. You know what? Okay. Okay. Holler at me on Twitter at bblizak and or at Shut Up Podcast. My website, the website for the podcast is shutuppodcast.com. You'll find a link to the show notes. Every episode has a show notes, and you can find the links are there. And it just hit me. I'm processing a thought that at the moment, I don't allow comments to any episode, but I think what I will do is put a section where you can just email me your thoughts about a previous episode, as opposed to having a discussion group out there. Now, I will have allow you to use the comment section to send me an email. And if I like your thoughts, if I find your thoughts insightful or I like your thoughts, I'll read them out loud. Okay? Yeah. All right. So either use the contact us or the mechanism on the website to contact me, or do the old-fashioned way and use an email address, which is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. You could also to subscribe to this podcast, go also go on the website shutuppodcast.com, and there's a big ass RSS feed link on there, or if you're not that technical, just go to Google and Apple Podcast. Yo, thank you for listening, seriously, from the bottom of my heart, and remember, be kind to your favorite podcast. Hey, peace.